then you actually became an act along with Meatloaf, right?
I did. We the first opening night in the Detroit show, there were some people from Rare Earth Records, which is a subsidiary of Motown, and they came to us a few weeks later, and they said, look, we want to put this duo out, you know, what do you think? And I said, okay.
So you were already going by the Stony?
Yeah. Because I never thought I would be singing for a living. So I had a friend back in Cedar Rapids that was a singer in this band, and he called himself Stony. And so I said, hey, why don't I just use that name?
Yeah.
You know, but 8 years later, I finally changed
That's
it.
That's what it was. You used it for 8 years.
Yeah.
So then they actually let Meatloaf go, right? The label?
They did. You know, they were right in that transition, moving all the offices out to Los Angeles, and Berry Gordy was retiring, and Suzanne DePass was actually setting up shop as the head of the company, and they just decided that they were going in a different direction, and Meatloaf had more of a rock thing, and they thought they could expand to do, I don't know what. They put me with Bob Gaudio and Artie Fields, and who had just come off the Helen Reddy thing, I Am Woman, and I'm going, this is not where I want to be either. So I was sitting.
So you and your child.
Yes.
Were living in L.A.
In L.A.,
you,
no car.
You got her out of the trunk, though, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I want to make sure.
And so she, we were sitting in L.A., and they kept farming me out to different producers and basically looking to do something with me. They just didn't know what. And I was just, by then, I was tired of not working.
Right.
So I called up Punch Andrews, Seeger's manager, and I said, what's happening in Detroit? I said, I'm coming back. I can't stand it out here. It's nothing to do. And he said, well, it just so happens that we need a background singer. I guess this guy, Luke somebody or other, was leaving the tour. They were in the middle of a tour.
And you're saying we need a backup singer? Who needs a backup singer?
Seeger.
Bob Seeger.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
And so I said, well, that doesn't sound too hard. I've never done that before, but...
You've always sang lead, right?
Yeah, up to that point. Other than one time I worked in the studio with Bob on the... Gosh, I can't remember the name of that record. It was right after back in 72. And I recorded some backgrounds with him on Kathmandu. So I said, yeah, I'll be right there. I got my little putt-putt, my little Honda, 1971 Honda, which was about the size of these two tables put together. My poor daughter was like, you know, the car was, I took it in to have it completely, you know, gone over, so it's a long trip. And, oh, yeah, it's great, you know. I got about 200 miles out and just, I could only go about 35 miles an hour. It was just awful. I got to St. Louis, and this just wonderful man and his wife, I stopped at a gas station, and he said, well, you know, your carburetor's backwards or whatever. I don't know anything about cars. And he took my daughter to his house. They fed me, and he took the car out in the, you know, in the back and in his garage and rebuilt the carburetor.
Wow.
For free.
And got you back on
Unbelievable.
The road. Isn't that
so
awesome?
I got in the car like 8 o'clock that night and doing 70 all the way to Detroit, and I made it there by midnight. So amazing. And then the next day I was, you know, out on tour with Bob.
Yeah. And so how long did you tour with him? I mean, you still work with him, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So that was, that would have been in 1974, right at the end of the year. And that was called the Borneo Band. Mm-hmm. And which had Alto Reeds. It was his first foray into the band. And Chris Campbell had just come in playing bass. Prior to that, they had this guy, Dick Sims, from Tulsa on keyboards, and he kicked bass pedals. And Drew Abbott was on guitar. And Jamie Oldecker was on drums. So that was very short-lived. And, of course, Marcy Levy was on the other singer. And that was kind of short-lived. And he ended that tour and decided he was going to not use any background singers and put the Silver Bullet Band together. Mm-hmm. And I didn't work with him for 2 years after that. Then I came back on in 78. And I guess he liked the idea of the singers again so much that mid-tour he brought in Laura Creamer to do that. And she's been with him off and on since then also.
I bet you really enjoy that.
I do.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're, knock on wood, we're really hoping that he goes out for one more time. So he was supposed to go out in October, but some things came up, so he's pushed it back until, I guess we're going to start rehearsing in January.
Mm-hmm. Getting ready so when the snow comes off the road, you'd be...
You know, he's one of the few people that loves to tour in the wintertime.
Really?
Always has, yeah. Yeah.
Well, you know what they say, no snow, no dough. That's what the agent told me when I was just a kid one time. I said, well, how come you can't get us a gig in January down in Miami or Texas or something? He says, no, Bronson, everybody wants to go down to Miami and Texas, and they know that, so they won't pay you. Now, if you'll go to Saskatchewan, Canada for New Year's Eve, I can get you some money, see?
Yeah.
No snow, no dough.
That's right. I have to remember that one.
I've never forgot that one. So we're sitting here in Nashville, though, right?
Yep.
So what? How did you come to be in Tennessee?
Well, I was living in L.A. and had been for at least a decade. I moved out there in '85 on a break I had when I was working with Eric Clapton, and I just decided that my mom had been ill for many years, and I wanted to go to an industry town that was one day a drive away, you know, from either my folks and my brothers in Michigan or my daughter lives in Florida. So I was one day a drive from each of them.
Right.
That's why I picked Nashville.
Yeah. And what year was that?
95.
95. Mm-hmm. So it's funny talking with you because you just, you know, you just mentioned things as you go, you know. That was right after I was working with Clapton. I mean, you know. So now when did that transition place? Was that... Did you meet him, like, in the Bob Seger days? Did you meet him in L.A.? How did you hook up with Eric Clapton?
Well, it was another kind of a fluke. Marcy Levy, mm-hmm. who was with Bob in 73, she had been working with Eric for a long time, off and on. And he called her up, said, I'm doing this record. Phil Collins is producing. We're down in Montserrat at George Martin's studio. Do you know anybody that has a good, strong voice? And she says, yes, I do. And she called me up.
Right.
And so I just said, yeah, packed my bags and got on the next plane and went down there. Oh, my God, what a place.
Oh, okay.
Unfortunately, it's no longer there because of the volcano. Mm-hmm. Just leveled everything. But and it was weird because the studio was set pretty high in the hills. I wouldn't call it mountains, but right in back as you were eating dinner, you could or at the pool, you could see the volcano steaming away. And I go, are we safe here? Oh, it's never going to erupt. Well, of course it did. But,
yeah.
It was a wonderful studio.
So you just recorded with him, or did you tour with him too?
I recorded about 3 songs with him, and we were taking a break, and he came over, and he says, how would you girls like to go on the tour? I went, okay. Seems like my life.
You got your bag packed, right?
Yeah, I have all I need right here.
That must have been a real, real,
oh, my God, what a time.
Oh,
that was wonderful.
I'll bet. That's incredible.